You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire, 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa, ko Harry Willis toko noa, nau mai, hare mai ke te wire mō tēnei rā. Kia ora, welcome to The Wire for Thursday, the 27th of July. It's Harry, your host here. I am joined by my producer Ben in studio. Coming up on the show today, we speak to Warwick Quinn from the Building and Construction Industry Training Organisation to talk about a shortage of skilled tradespeople. We are joined by Labour leader Andrew Little. He is back for our weekly chat. Ben also speaks to Catherine Leaning, a policy fellow at Motu Economic and Public Policy Research, on planned changes to the emissions trading scheme. Our Thursday feature, State of the States, has returned with correspondence from WNYU's Nick Sawani. And finally, we have the Drug Foundation's Ross Bell talking to us about the recent deaths from synthetic highs. We've got a great show lined up for you today. If you have any thoughts throughout it, please get in touch by texting 5395, or you can give us a call on 309 3879 to chat to Ben about any of the stories that we're covering today. You can even hit us up on Twitter, 95BFM News.
Irirangi Poho, Radio Bosom.
The Wire.
Up first today, we speak to Warwick Quinn from the building and construction industry on a rising shortage of skilled tradespeople. Producer Ben has the story.
Blood on the floor at Fletcher Building. The company's chief executive, Mark Adamson, is out.
Breaking this morning, what is going on at the country's biggest listed company, Fletcher Building?
Financial nightmare at Fletcher Building.
Fletcher Building is in turmoil.
Profit forecasts have been slashed and the CEO is leaving after calling some colleagues pompous old farts.
That was media reaction to the resignation of Fletcher Building CEO Mark Adamson. The surprise announcement came after a sharp downturn in the fortunes of New Zealand's largest construction firm. Earlier this month, Fletcher's slashed their estimate for this year's earnings by around a quarter, with the company's share price then dropping to a 16-month low. Much of the losses are tied to a blowout in costs on two large projects, Sky City's Convention Centre and a $300 million precinct for the Ministry of Justice. This comes as New Zealand is experiencing a reported shortage of skilled tradespeople, which has added to costs. For more, I spoke with the head of the Building and Construction Industry Training Organisation, Warwick Quinn, and asked him if we do have enough people in training.
No, we don't really. If you look at the total number of workers needed in construction over the next 5 years, it's about 60,000 workers. That's right across the board from, you know, sort of administration people right through to architects, engineers and tradespeople. And of that 60,000, about half of them need to be trade qualified one way or another. And of that number, which is, you know, 28,000 to 30,000, will produce over the next 5 years, you know, a little under half of that. So we have a long way to go to fill the current skill shortage as it's currently predicted. For the last 6-7 years, well, not the last 6 or 7, the global financial crisis, which ran from 2008 to about 2012, was the largest recession for construction New Zealand has ever seen. The number of homes that we didn't build during that period was double the number of homes we never built in all other recessions combined. So it was very significant, and because of that long-term recession, best part of 5 years, the sector really restructured itself to cope with about half the number of construction jobs it would normally have to do during that time. And then for a couple of years after that, there's always a lag between taking trainees on and actually signing up apprentices. It takes a couple of years for firms to be confident that their workbook is full enough to warrant investment in training, because, you know, training lasts 3-4 years, and therefore we add a couple of more years to that 5 years. So for the best part of, you know, 6 or 7 years or so, we never really trained in the numbers that we would have liked to have had, simply because of the global financial crisis, and we're reeling from that now, particularly when, you know, the level of construction has gone up hugely in the last couple of years. A couple of things have happened in the last 25 years or so. The sector has specialised a lot more. We're a lot more acquiring of supplying and installing products are part of the market, particularly for new homes and in the commercial space. So we have grown another skill demand, which is more specialisation that's been occurring in construction. So the fully rounded, fully qualified person, there's still a role for them, and we're growing those numbers well at the moment. But we're unable to address these kind of shorter, specialised skill sets that have been developed as these firms have specialised and only doing part of what a full qualification would normally do. So we have a pilot about to start with a number of firms with the blessing of the Tertiary Education Commission and NZQA to see whether we can actually do that. So what that does, it recognises the skill sets that are out there being developed in a formal way and puts them on the NZQA framework so that we can grow the number of firms that can train because the training aligns with their business and maybe attract more kids and people into construction who might not otherwise want to do a four-year program, but they might do 12 months. So that means we can grow our capacity and therefore not limit or choke our construction activity because we can't get skills.
And just carrying on from that, I guess, so how do we get more people into training?
Yeah, a couple of things when it comes to construction. We need to obviously increase the number of firms that are willing to train, and this sort of training we've just spoken about will help address that. But also we need to broaden the number of people who are interested in considering a career in construction, and that's not that easy, particularly when 15 years ago New Zealand had its lowest birth rate per capita ever, and we're just about to enter one of our hugest construction booms, or in the midst of it now, at a time where we have fewer and fewer school leavers that the rest of New Zealand is also going to be competing with. So we have to broaden who we operate for and who we attract, including women. We have a very low percentage of women in construction. The number of women we've got in trades training, you know, we've got 11,000 trainees and only 2.6% of them are female. And increase our attractiveness to Māori Pacifica and also other immigrants, particularly in Auckland, Asians and other people who are now settling in Auckland who may not have considered construction as a career. So we have a number of avenues, but it's really important that we address all of them at once and not try and do a piecemeal bit with each of them. What the BCITO is doing is looking at a number of changes to the way it operates and asking government to dust off the old legislation. You know, the Act we work under is 25 years old and the sector's moved on to a new way of operating now. So dusting off the legislation and providing us with more tools so we can provide more flexible learning and more aligned with industry needs is really key to cracking this nut. We only have 10% of firms, potential firms, in training at any one point in time. So 10% of firms are training 100% of our apprentices. So we really do need to broaden the number of firms that train. And whilst the training won't be the traditional fully rounded person, still being able to recognise the skill sets that are being developed in those firms is critically important to making sure we have the right skills in the market.
So around, you know, up to 8 or 10,000.
Shit.
The Wire. It's time to talk politics with Labour leader Andrew Little.
Yes, that's right. It is now time for our weekly chat with the leader of the Labour Party, Andrew Little. We are joined by Andrew now in the studio. Kia ora, Andrew. How are you?
Kia ora. Good afternoon.
It's very... You good, good today?
I'm very good today.
It's very good to hear. You should offer my congratulations on the passing of the second reading of your Healthy Homes Bill. For those who aren't aware, the bill's aim is for every rental home in New Zealand to meet minimum standards of heating and insulation. The bill has been mostly lauded, receiving lots of support, so Labour, New Zealand First, Greens, Māori Party and United Future have voted in favour of its passing, though ACT and National are in opposition. The Building and Construction Minister, Dr. Nick Smith, has been critical. He said the requirements outlined for homes to be heated, ventilated, properly drained and to be free of drafts are already required under existing housing regulations. How does your bill differ from these already existing regulations?
Yeah, those regulations have been around for a while, but, you know, funny enough, we still have thousands of rental homes that don't meet those requirements, and basically because there's actually no enforcement of those sorts of standards when it comes to existing rental properties. So what this does is make it a requirement in every rental agreement that those things will be met, and there are enforcement provisions that, you know, you get the relevant part of the Ministry of Business Innovation and Employment to enforce it, or you can enforce it through the Tenancy Tribunal. So it actually not just requires the standards to be set, but provides an enforcement mechanism by the tenant. So, yeah, I was really pleased that it got through a second reading. That sets up well for seeing it passed into law eventually. Unfortunately, it won't be until after the election, but it was a good showing last night, and I'm very appreciative of the support from other parties.
So under these previous housing regulations, local authorities are held responsible for the enforcement of them within their districts. Where how does your bill differ from this? How are you going to be stricter on enforcement?
Well, first of all, there'll be an outfit within the Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment. This came through the submissions to the Select Committee, so they will have an audit task to perform. But in the end, tenants will be able to enforce it through the Tenancy Tribunal, because not having those, meeting those standards when they ought to be there, will be a breach of the tenancy agreement and can be enforced through the Tenancy Tribunal.
Under the current government, insulation will be made compulsory in all rental homes from July 1st, 2019. Your bill states that all agreements regarding regulations set are going to be made in existence after 5 years after standards are promulgated.
Promulgated.
Is this not too long?
Yeah, I mean, the standard, that this is the stunning thing that the government did last year of their legislation. They introduced a standard for insulation, sure, but it's a 1978 standard. We've got a 2008 standard for insulation. Quite why the government thinks we should have one that's 30 years old, I don't know, but that's their thing. But we want the 2008 standard applied. And what it is, basically, the way this works is that as tenancies come up for renewal, then the landlords will have to comply, but there's a maximum period of 5 years for compliance. So there will be some properties that might take that long for compliance to be achieved, but it will be a compliance against the 2008 insulation standard. And then there are the other things. There's no proper ventilation, proper drainage, a source of heating.
I've seen there has been some criticism that this bill doesn't address the health issues as much as you're saying it will. How does this bill come about addressing health issues?
I'm not familiar with that criticism. I mean, I've seen that the people who have supported it, including many from the medical profession, and as recently as this week, I took a petition of 1,000 signatures from the medical students for global awareness. They were very clear, and one of those people, Josh Smith, is a 60-year student doing paediatrics at the moment. He was motivated to support it because of, you know, he's seen the impact on children. By having houses that are not only properly insulated but also well ventilated and also have a source of heating, then the preventable respiratory conditions that a lot of children are going to hospital for at the moment, 42,000 of them in fact last year alone, that brings down the health problems and therefore the cost of the health system of having to deal with those sorts of issues. I mean, those respiratory conditions apply as much to adults too. So to have a healthy home, to stop mold spores growing that are the source of infection, and, you know, make sure that there's good air circulating and that people are warm, you need these standards. That's what will help in terms of health results.
In terms of setting these more requirements for landlords, is there not a risk that there could be a link between landlords having to pay more to update these houses and raising rent as a result?
Yeah, that argument's been trotted out. Funnily enough, the Property Investors Federation, who not necessarily big fans of the Labor Party, they came out and said that these are pragmatic and reasonable standards to have. When you consider the value of the asset, the residential dwelling that we're talking about, this is a very small cost. And if you consider that the life of that dwelling is, what, 20, 30, 40 years, this is a small cost at a single point in time that can be recovered over a period of time. So I don't think any cost that a landlord has to go to meet these standards is a case for a massive hike in rents. I just don't see that happening.
Okay, moving on. Matiria Ture's revelation she lied as a young solo mother in the early 1990s in order to get more benefit has been generating a lot of news in the past week and a half. The story has been dominating headlines. There's been criticism, there's some political spin going on here. Do you agree with this? There's been criticism that the Greens are using her story for their own benefit in terms of pushing their agenda?
Well, I think what has happened, Matiria has come out and said what's happened. She's opened up and been very honest about it, and that's an admirable thing to do. And she's now in the process of, you know, dealing with wins and what she has to do to make amends or to reconcile what she's actually done. I can understand why Matidi has done this. She's drawing attention to the fact that for a lot of people on the benefit, it is tough. In fact, it's pretty much tough for everybody on a benefit. No one, you know, gets wealthy on a benefit. And a lot of people struggle, and particularly when you've got dependent children, it can be even tougher. So she's drawing attention to that. I do have to say, though, that, you know, from a politician's point of view, a lawmaker's point of view, I mean, one of the reasons we come into politics and into Parliament is because we want the opportunity to set the rules and ensure that people get treated better or more fairly. But we cannot be seen to be, and I don't support or condone law-breaking or rule-breaking. There are a lot of people on the benefit who fully comply with the rules. They do that because, you know, they don't want to be hassled, or they don't want to carry that in their conscience well into the future. So we do have to be clear that we have a system, whether we like it or not, there are rules. Those are the rules. If we want to change those rules, you know, there's processes we can use to do that, and we should be using those processes to do that.
In light of this, do you think that having such a spotlight on Green Party this close to the election, do you think that this is useful for Labor?
I haven't really seen it in those terms. I think, you know, it's an issue that the Greens have put up. I've had to be very clear from Labor's point of view. We don't condone rule breaking or breaking the law, whether or not we like the rules that is applied to many benefits. Those rules have to be complied with. I've certainly made that clear. The Greens have got, Matilda in particular, have got this way of highlighting her concerns about the life that that many people on a benefit are leading at the moment, and it is tough. So we've talked about some particular policies we've got that will alleviate the stress and the pressure that many beneficiaries are on. So the winter energy payment, things like the working for families and the thresholds and so on around that. So I think it is important to talk about solutions as well, rather than talk about, you know, what has happened historically, regardless of the circumstances of that and the reasons behind it. We've got to talk about the solutions, and I think that's, you know, for the purposes of the election, that's what voters really need to hear about.
So do you think her actions could affect any possibility of appointing her as a minister in a Labor League government?
You know, I haven't really thought about that. I do say on Parliament, though, we are a House of Representatives, not a Parliament of Angels. People come here with a variety of backgrounds, including having done things wrong. That's just life. But if people are making a contribution, got good ideas about, you know, fixing the unfairness in the world and the things that are wrong, or good ideas about making life better, then we need those people in Parliament. And so I don't think we should be too fussed about that. But I haven't thought about, in fact, the Green Party and Labor Party have specifically agreed that we're not thinking about, you know, who might be eligible for a cabinet if we get the chance to put one together until after the election.
Okay, thank you very much, Andrew. You have a lovely day.
Thank you. You too.
You've been listening to Andrew Little from the Labor Party. The Wire.
Yes, you're tuned into The Wire. If you have any thoughts to share, please send your text through to 5395. We'll be right back after a little break. But for now, here is Protect Your Neck by the Wu-Tang Clan.
Yo, what's up, man?
Coolin', man.
Chillin'. Yo, you know I had to call. You know why, right?
Why?
Because, yo, I never, ever call and ask you to play something, right?
Yeah.
You know what I want to hear, right?
What you want to hear?
I want to hear that Wu-Tang joint.
Wu-Tang again?
Yeah, again and again. Wu-Tang Clan coming at ya. Watch your step, kid. Watch your step, kid. Watch your step, kid. Watch your step, kid. Watch your step, kid.
Smoke all the mic like smoking Joe Frazier, the Hellraiser, raising hell with the flavor. Terrorize the jam like troops in Pakistan, swinging through your town like your neighborhood Spider-Man. So all tick-tock and keep ticking, while I get you flipping off the shit I'm kicking. The Lone Ranger, co-ed, danger, deep in the dark with the art to rip the charts apart. The vandal, too hot to handle your battle. You're saying goodbye like Devin Campbell. Roughneck, Inspector Dex on the set, the rebel. I make more noise than heavy metal.
The way I make the crowd go wild. Sit back, relax, won't smile. Ray got it going on, pal. Call me the rap assassinator. Rhymes rugged and built like Schwarzenegger. And I'ma get mad deep like a threat. Blow up your project, then take all your assets. Cause I came to shake the frame in half with the thoughts. drops that bomb, shit like math. So if you wanna try to flip, yo, flip on the next man, cause I'll grab the clip and hit you with 16 shots and more. I got going to war with the melting pot.
It's the Method Man for short, Mr. Map. Move it on your left, ah, and set it off, get it off, let it off like a gat. I wanna break food, cop me back. Small change, they putting shame in the game. I take game and blow that nigga out the frame. And like fame, my style will live forever. Niggas crossing over like they don't know no better, but I do. True, can I get a sue? Not respect due to the 1-6, ooh, I mean, oh. Yo, check out the flow like the Hudson or PCP when I'm dusting. Niggas off because I'm hot like sauce. The smoke from the lyrical blood make me, ooh.
What, grab my nut, get screwed.
Ow.
Here comes my Shaolin style. Truth, B-A-B-B-Y-U. To my crew with the,
Yeah, come on, baby, come on.
First things first, man, you with the worst. I'll be sticking pins in your head like a nurse. I'll attack any nigga who's slacking his mat. Come fully packed with the fat brother stack. Shame on you when you step through. Two, the old dirty bastard, straight from the Brooklyn Zoo. And I'll be damned if I let any man come to my center. You enter the winter, straight up and down that shit. Damn, you can't slam, don't let me get fool on the man. The old dirty bastard is dirty and stinking. Ace on your nigga rolling with the knife of the creeps. Niggas be rolling with a stash, ain't saying gas. Bite my style, I bite your motherfucker.
Out loud, my style is wild, so book me. Not long is how long that this rhyme took me. Ejecting styles from my lethal weapon. My pen that rocks from here to Oregon. Here's more again, catch it like a psycho flashback. I love gats, rap was a gun, you wouldn't bust back. I come with all types of shapes and sounds. And wherever I lounge is my stomping grounds. I give an order to my peeps across the water to go and snatch up props all around the border and get far like a shooting star. Cause who I are is living the life of Pablo Escobar. Point blank as I kick the square biz. There it is, your fucking pros and there it goes.
Yo, chill with the feedback block, we don't need that. It's 10 o'clock, ho, where the f*** you see that? Feeling mad hostile, ran out apostle. Throwing like Christ when I speaks the gospel. Stroll with the holy robe, then attack the globe with the buckets, style the ruckus. 10 times 10 men committing mad sin. Turn the other cheek and I'll break your f***ing chin. Slain boom bangs like African drums.
LB.
Coming around a mountain when I come. Crazy flamboyant for the rap enjoyment. My plan increased like black unemployment. Yeah, another one there. Took a genius, take us the f*** out of here.
The Wu is too slamming for these coke killer labels. So ain't had hit since I seen Aunt Mabel. Be doing all the sin like Cain did Abel. Now they money's getting stuck to the gum under the table. That's what you get when you misuse what I invent. Your empire falls and you lose every cent. But trying to blow up a scrub, now that thought is just as bright as a 20 watt light bulb. Should've pumped it when I rocked it. Niggas so stingy, they got short arms and deep pockets. This goes on in some companies with majors that's scared to death to pump these. First of all, who's your A&R? A mountain climber who plays an electric guitar. But he don't know the meaning of dope when he's looking for a suit and tie rap that's cleaner than a bar soap. And I'm the dirtiest thing in sight. Matter of fact, bring out the girls and let's have a mud fight.
The best of check your neck, the best of check your neck.
I am the auteur of my mind's eye. Huh? Our consciousness is only the second unit to our subconscious. Alfred Hitchcock didn't invent the dolly zoom. My soul invented the dolly zoom.
So you are keen to go to the film festival then?
The New Zealand International Film Festival is back for 2017. On now until August 6th. The world's best movies at Auckland's best cinemas. For program schedule and tickets, go to nziff.co.nz.
Have you guys heard about BFM's Winter Dump?
Even in a housing climate where living under a rock is becoming an increasingly viable option, everyone's heard about 95BFM's Winter Dump, right? It's only the most incredible, life-altering, heart-invigorating prize pack this side of the Bombays, so hold on to your mittens, kids, because these fully set prizes could be yours.
Fresh fruit and veg delivered to you for 3 months from Faro Online.
A year's supply of Go Healthy Verdefense vitamins.
A year's supply of Karma Cola.
A weekly meal for two all winter at Mexican Cafe.
A $500 shopping spree at Def Store.
A winter prize pack from O Natural.
A gnarly Olympus action camera thanks to Pro Gear.
A gorgeous champagne flight for two over Auckland and Rangitoto thanks to Auckland. Auckland Seaplanes.
$500 to spend on new gear at AF's Colour.
Custom skis from Kingswood Skis, valued at $1,350.
And a weekly feast of Southern Fried Vegan Chicken at Lord of the Fries.
95BFM Winter Dump is on now, so get entering. Go to 95BFM.com.
I am officially running for President of the United States.
Primary consultant is myself because I have a very good brain and I've said a lot of things.
When you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
I like China. You can win against China if you're smart.
So don't tell me about China. I know China.
China! I beat the people from China. What the hell is going on?
It's time for State of the States.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. Oh, where to begin?
Yes, that's right. It is time for State of the States, back for our weekly chats with US correspondent Nick Sawani from WNYU, the radio station at New York University. This week, I spoke to Nick earlier this morning about the week's events in the United States. So Tuesday's vote, how did that go?
Right.
Break it down for me. Like, what sort of went down this week with the healthcare bill?
Right. So actually, there's a lot that's been going on, like, within just the last couple hours right now. But basically, on Wednesday afternoon, so like just a few hours ago, the Senate rejected a proposal to repeal major parts of Obamacare without providing a replacement. This is following earlier this week, yesterday, Tuesday, when the Senate and the House voted to like begin debate on a full repeal of Obamacare without a replacement. So it's actually looking up now because the Senate rejected the proposal to repeal major parts of the Affordable Care Act without providing a replacement. So that's actually looking pretty good compared to where we were at just a few days ago. The Republicans, there are a lot of Republicans in the Senate who are not in favor of repealing Obamacare without a replacement because it would leave a ton of their constituents just totally without health care. And so that's kind of where the Republicans are at now. But then we're also seeing like John McCain, who came back into the Senate on Tuesday night, gave a speech that said he would not vote for the Senate health care bill, but then he did cast a yes vote for it on Tuesday night.
So why it's the contradiction been, it's, there?
No one really knows for sure, but it looks like McCain kind of was – he's always been kind of like – recently he's been speaking out a lot against the Republican Party, talking a lot about how, you know, it's not going a direction in which he wants – but he also still is a Republican and probably was convinced to just vote along party lines. It was only 7 Republicans that voted against the measure, but that was enough to push it over the majority that was needed to not repeal parts of Obamacare.
Do you think that there's more Republicans than just the 7 who are against it? And do you think that this is indicative of any sort of good pressuring tactics from Trump?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, McCain is just one example, a lot of Republicans have, like, you know, lesser well-known Republican senators and representatives especially, have been talking about how, you know, they don't necessarily like the direction that the party's going. But a lot of them, in order to maintain support from the party, which is, you know, what helps them fund their campaigns and what helps them maintain their seats in office, they end up voting along party lines. Only Republicans who, you know, feel like they're either don't care about securing their seat in the future or are convinced that they're making the right choice and that their constituents will see that are the ones who will vote against party lines. And that's very rare, and it's happening more and more. And I think this is definitely an indication that it will continue to happen, and we will see more Republicans kind of go against the new direction of the Republican Party.
So the Democrats are definitely sort of celebrating this as a success. What is the future of this affordable healthcare bill? Would you say it's dead in the water?
I don't know, right? Like, we thought that it was totally dead a few months ago, and then now suddenly it's coming back. Now that progress has been halted again. It isn't totally unlikely that we see another healthcare bill in the future. It's clear that it's very, very, very unlikely. I don't want to say for sure or not, but it's very unlikely that Obamacare is going to be repealed without a replacement bill in place. Whether or not we're going to see a replacement bill in the near future is still up for debate, but the Republicans have been consistently losing on this. So for them to keep on pushing for it publicly is probably not a good idea just for them. And instead, they probably should and would shift over to other issues that they might be able to win on rather than healthcare, which they're continually losing on.
So what sort of issues are there that they could potentially be winning some legislation on?
Trump's been able to use executive orders to get immigration stuff passed. We might be able to see them doing that, though, because, you know, immigration bills generally affect fewer, you know, healthcare affects everyone. So constituents of Republican senators and representatives care a lot more about it. Whereas with immigration, it only really affects like areas with high minority populations and places like that. So we could see them pushing for that. Military, which Trump had certain things to say about also yesterday, but, you know, military and like fighting against ISIS, we can see Republicans trying to gain ground there. Healthcare is just a unique issue because it's so broad and it affects so many more people than your average political law or bill.
So Trump's tweets about the military, was that even like a few hours ago? So what the hell's that about? He's... He's banning transgender right. people from the military. Is this going to become law?
Well, so, you know, it was just a tweet as of now, but there's a lot of interesting things around this. So first of all, in his tweets, he talked about how he was consulting his generals, but the top general in the military wasn't even present in Washington this weekend. He was on leave for some personal reasons. It's very likely because the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, is actually reaching out to transgender members of the military and preparing to file a class action lawsuit. The courts have struck down President Trump's executive orders in the past, so it's not unlikely that this is something that could be struck down, especially because it seems like it's inherently unconstitutional because you are, you know, he's literally specifically targeting a group of people and saying that they're not allowed to join the military.
But what were the reasons he gave? I mean, it's just bizarre.
He just said victory cannot be burdened with the tremendous medical costs and disruption that transgender in the military would entail, which was not even proper grammar. But, you know, his argument, which has been debunked by experts immediately, was that the medical costs associated with transgender members of the military are too high. But that's not really true. The military has spent more – I saw a statistic that the military has spent more on Viagra than it has on transgender members' healthcare costs. So it's really not the reasons he gave were that it would be too expensive. So,
but that's just a little bit of bullshit.
There's no real. But it logical
is. It is a bit crazy that why would he make this move? I mean, he has made efforts in the past to sort of align himself with LGBT communities.
Right.
It's just so.
It's just totally out of nowhere. Yeah. Nothing in the news about this majorly before. He just dropped these tweets, and that was it.
Oh, well, we'll have to see if anything comes of that.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So Sean Spicer is out and Scaramucci is in. What do we know about him? I read that he is like a mini Trump. Is this true?
Yeah, kind of. Like, he's also, you know, from the private sector, has history with Trump. In terms of how he would be as a press secretary, we're unsure. He said yesterday... with like leaks that he's just going to fire everybody who in efforts to crack down on leaks coming out of the White House. Yeah, very, very much trying to be hard about it, making sure that there's no leaks from the White House. Whether that'll be effective or not, we don't know. Yeah, he's definitely a mini Donald Trump. In the small amount of like press that we've seen from him, he's definitely tried to sound a lot like Donald Trump. You know, if you look at his interviews on CNN or whatever, he's definitely trying to emulate that kind of like rambly kind of just mannerisms that Donald Trump has.
Do you think he'll have more success than Sean Spicer in terms of public image?
Maybe. I mean, you know, Sean Spicer wasn't well liked by anyone. Scaramucci has the chance of being liked by those who are still Trump supporters, but we don't totally know. He's probably not going to be as we'll have to wait to see the next episode of Saturday Night Live, I guess. But he's probably not going to be as much of a joke to the public as Sean Spicer was. You know, I think Donald Trump made a kind of smart move because he's picking someone who's just going to act exactly like him. And but we'll have to wait to see details about how he'll be as a press secretary or anything like that.
Yeah, only time can tell.
Excuse me. I'm really rich.
That was State of the States.
Bye-bye.
How stupid is this?
Yes, that's right. That was State of the States with Nick Sawani from WNYU. Up next, we have a report into policy research on planned changes to the emissions and trading scheme. Ben speaks to policy fellow Catherine Leaning to find out a little bit more.
Earlier this week, Minister for Climate Change, Paula Bennett, announced a raft of changes to the emissions trading scheme. The changes are to meet New Zealand's obligations as a signatory of the Paris Climate Agreement. For more on the changes, I spoke with Catherine Leaning, a policy fellow at Motu Economic and Public Policy Research.
An emissions trading scheme allows a government to set an overall limit or a cap on the number of emissions and for the market to then set a price based on the supply of units that are created. So it's a mechanism that creates an emission price on greenhouse gas emissions, and that creates an incentive to change behavior across the economy and reduce emissions. The latest changes are three major changes to the architecture of the system. The first is to introduce the government's sale of units through an auction mechanism under a cap. The value of this change is that in the past, the New Zealand market was able to access unlimited international units overseas, which reduced the incentive for New Zealand to reduce its own emissions. By introducing a cap and limiting the number of units that come out to the New Zealand government, this creates an option for the government to help drive domestic emissions downward. The second change is to then limit the number of international units that can be purchased by participants in the future. This is of value, again, because it limits supply in the market and helps to drive domestic emission reductions. And the fact that we had unlimited access to international low-cost units in the past was a real problem in the system. And the third change is to start raising the price ceiling. Right now, no one would pay more than $25 a ton for their emissions, and the government is signaling that will need to rise over time. The Paris Agreement sets an expectation that all countries will work toward net zero emissions over time, and the changes that the government is putting in place in the system will help to put New Zealand on a track toward that. However, the effectiveness in actually reducing emissions will depend on the actual decisions that are made about the level of the price cap and the level of units that will be sold under the auction mechanism. So there are important decisions still to come. But this combination of introducing auctioning under a cap, implementing a new price ceiling that will rise over time, and limiting access to international units gives the government the tools that it needs to help drive down New Zealand's domestic emissions over time. What the government has decided now are the tools that it will use, but it hasn't actually decided how ambitious our emission reductions will be, how quickly we'll move toward net zero, and what emission price will be reflected in the economy to drive behavior change. So the government has signaled that these decisions could be later next year, and that the auction mechanism and the change in the price cap might not actually happen until 2021. So it's important that steps be taken now to continue reducing New Zealand's emissions up through 2020. We can't just wait until 2021 to get serious about this. And then the government will need to take really bold decisions about the level of emission reductions and the level of the price ceiling that will be put in place after 2021.
I don't know, and frankly, the whole thing gives me the heebie-jeebies.
The Wire.
Yes, that was Ben's report into policy research on planned changes to the emissions and trading scheme. We're just going to have a little break now, but we will be back very soon. Give me a buzz on 5395 if you have any thoughts and want to share. Here is Blue Train Lines featuring King Cruel by Mount Kimby. BFM.
Here's another thing that threw up in my mind, like the razor blade in her wrist, locked in a closet of Deep Space Nine. Deposit for a wasted life, I lost it with a sweepstakes eye and another fucking fight. A junkie in the queue for the library line, that's another lost sight. A stabbing of his eyes, her veins are now popping like blue train lines. Still bumping on the bathroom floor, and not for the frost, or what? The mirror thought it saw, you got a clearer thought, and pulled it straight out, you got me jumping from a real safe height. I wanna fool forever if you ain't by my side, I wanna fool forever if you ain't in my life. I guess been eating away, when I found her, all drowned in grey, I might have drowned her. I could have played number, and yeah, I might have seen it all. Inhale, exhale, I never in his life before. It's lightly, it's down smoke settled in a fabric of the BME34. Dropping burger crumbs on the CD floor, in a back 12 CD store. Got a radio rack and a CD door, and she's filled up on the end, and she still needs more. That dying blood. £6 in my pocket, I threw another man. Another man's sex, I guess he might have seen it all. I guess been eating away, when I found her, all drowned in grey, I might have drowned her. I could have played number, and yeah, I might have.
Te whakarongo koe ki te wire, marunga irirangi pō.
The Wire.
Yes, you're tuned into 95BFM. Up next, producer Ben speaks to Ross Bell about the recent deaths from synthetic highs.
So far this month, 8 deaths across Auckland have been linked to synthetic highs. Emergency services are also reporting a spike in hospitalisations and a warning of a possible new chemical. However, the way this has been handled has drawn criticism, including from Associate Health Minister Peter Dunn.
I'm not satisfied, though, with the information that's being shared. I don't think it's acceptable that, for instance, their announcements seem to be made to the news media at the same time as they're being informed to the government. So we're sort of playing a bit of catch-up here, and I think we need to have better information coordination.
Also critical is the head of the Drug Foundation, Ross Bell. I asked him for his evaluation of the ongoing situation.
Well, I think it's been really tricky because we've had a lot of speculation, including from the police, that there's things like weed killer and fly spray and rat killer that people are consuming in the synthetic cannabis. We've talked to ESR and they've told us that that's certainly not true. I think what we are dealing with is synthetic cannabinoid that is very potent and very dangerous. The one of the challenges we have is that there's a lot of swirling rumour, even the coroner has said the causes of death haven't been confirmed yet. So it could be we find out in a few months that these were just coincidental deaths that weren't synthetic cannabis. But we do know that there's probably quite dangerous chemicals out there right now, which are worse than they were 12 months ago, which were, and it seems that the chemicals are getting more potent and more dangerous.
And what do you make of the way that the cases have been handled?
The way that this has been handled has been really sloppy, and that's putting it politely. We were talking to the police early last week before they put out their press release, saying that they shouldn't do anything like that until they release any toxicology results on the specific chemicals that we're talking about, so that we can have a better informed discussion around what it is we're dealing with and what kind of help and support we could be providing. But they chose not to do that, and I think it's kind of burnt them quite badly because they haven't come clean about what chemicals we're dealing with. The local DHB wasn't kept in the loop. The Ministry of Health wasn't kept in the loop. The Drug Policy Minister's Office wasn't kept in the loop. And I think I understand the police motivation to wanting to put out some good public health warnings, but I think maybe in future they could reflect on this and find ways to improve, how they go about providing these warnings. This is complicated, right? This is not going to be an easy fix, but I think there's some things that we can do to help reduce the risks. I don't think we'll eliminate the risks. One of those things is to establish what other countries have done, which is essentially an early warning system, so that if police or ESR or the ambulance service or an accident and emergency department comes across a new psychoactive substance that's causing problems, then having a way that information can quickly be shared to other health professionals and then ultimately to the wider public, so that we can get proper and better arranged, better managed health warnings out to the public. Because this problem isn't going to go away. I think we're going to see these chemicals always kind of coming into the black market, which then you wonder, well, could we do something that provides a safer alternative for people who are wanting to get high? And in that regard, I would think legalising and regulating natural cannabis could be one way to reduce some of these risks, give people a much safer alternative. But I think we have to remember that the kind of high that these new synthetic cannabinoids are giving people is a specific type of high, and often it's the kind of high that they want. And it's not a natural cannabis high. So it's something more intense. And it could be because often the people we're talking about are people living rough, people who are living very vulnerable lives on the margins of society, and they're wanting to get a high that gets them completely out of it. And so I think we have to understand that we're not going to be able to stop people using this stuff. I just think, if that's the case, then we have to make sure we can provide better support to them, work with people like the Auckland City Mission, who are often providing health and social services to these guys, help them being able to provide their services better, know what to look out for, how to respond to, you know, medical emergencies and those kinds of things. But I think that this is the new reality we're in, that we're always going to get new chemicals. People are always wanting to going to get out of it. And we can't just expect tough law enforcement or moralising from our politicians to make this problem go away.
Can anyone explain why the modern-day whales are so big?
The Wire. That was The Wire.
Yes, that brings us to the end of our show for another week. Just before we leave, we're going to keep up with our tradition of giving advice in the corner. Ben, what have you got?
Didn't know you were going to go to me first. Well, I've got one. Sounds a bit paranoid, but I'm a big supporter of people. You should keep quite a lot of your, like, money in, as physical cash with you. Like, not trusting it all to the banks. Just because you think about it, for all the money you have supposedly in your account, how much do you physically have that you can hold in your hand?
But how much are you likely to lose that money or have it nicked off you?
Well, you don't tell people, like, I've just done on air.
There's a reason we're heading to a cashless society.
Yeah, so you can't, like, drop it.
Caitlin, you're also here. Any advice from you today?
I'd just like to, I try and do this as much as I can. I recommend this all the time in my personal life to anybody who'll listen, but two breakfasts,
yep,
really the key to a good day. You want to have your first breakfast, then you want to have another breakfast, and then you don't eat your lunch until lunchtime. It's
like
amazing.
In the Fellowship of the Ring, and they're like, where's second breakfast?
Yeah, 11sies.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so how
it.
Much of a gap between the two breakfasts?
The commute, maybe half an hour.
Oh, yeah. Makes sense.
I've got some advice from Bill Gates. He opened up. He's a pretty rich dude. So he says to learn more about the world's problems. Being more aware of the problems humanity faces will make you better equipped to work to solve them. So you should stay tuned to The Wire to learn more about the world's problems.
Do you think you'd agree with Ben saying keep all your money in cash?
Not all.
He's
of
got
it.
Quite
not all
a lot.
Of it. I'd say like 10%.
It can be a bit like least. Novel if you have like some sort of money, like piggy bank or something where you can see it accumulate. Somewhere that's safe in your room or something, I don't know.
Piggy bank, so it's a very obvious place to keep it. I like to keep it inside books. Makes it nice and folded. Anyway. I actually found out my dad does the same thing, but he never told me it, so it's like a weird sort of inherited...
genetic.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so, yeah, that brings us to the end. Thank you guys for Advice Corner.
Cheers.
A big thank you to all of those who spoke with us on the show today. We had Andrew Little, Nick Sawani, Catherine Leaning, Ross Bell and Warwick Quinn. And of course, thank you to all of you listeners for tuning into The Wire this week. We will be back again the same time next Thursday. Up next, we have Sigrid with the 1-4.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.